Welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Before we get into our PGA Championship preview with Brendan Porath and Kevin Van Valkenburg, let's talk about our PGA Championship sponsor, Greater Than Sports Drink. Greater Than is the best way to stay hydrated in the August heat. So far, it's been loved by readers of the website and listeners of the podcast that have given it a try. To try it out for yourself, visit drinkgt.com and use the code THEFRIEDEGG with no spaces to get 20% off your first order. That's drinkgt.com. And now, without further ado, here's our PGA Championship preview.
I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. We are here to preview this year's PGA Championship with SB Nation's Brendan Porath and ESPN's Kevin Van Valkenburg. Guys, welcome on.
Andy, thanks for having me. Good to be back. I tend to think of my partner, my guest partner here, more as like a Lou Gehrig stepping in for Wally Pipp. You know, we may never see our old friend Sean Martin again.
I thought about doing the entire podcast in a Sean Martin impression, a Sean Martin voice, but that would be, I think that's a committing to a bit that I'm not sure I could quite live up to.
Yeah, to clarify for the listeners, our regular preview and recap guy, Sean Martin, he's out on vacation this week. And it begs the question, I've often wondered if Martin was the smartest person in golf, and does skipping the 2018 PGA signal more about his intelligence, or is this just a coincidence?
I think, you know, he's in a spot where the company he works for has a busy schedule upcoming, and this is not the company he works for, so it's a suitable time to take a break.
Sure, he would if he were here, he would want you to know the FedEx Cup playoffs are just as big of a deal as the PGA Championship, and maybe more so. So
definitely, you know. The players is definitely a bigger deal.
I will say the highlight of my family vacation last week was pretending I needed to make a run for coffee for 15 minutes and using it as a reason to just drive around for an hour to keep my sanity and listen to your podcast last week on the way you guys would change golf. That was a fantastic and entertaining debut on the Fried Egg for Kevin.
It's just, you know, it's like a author writing his first book. You just pour everything you have into your first novel.
Yeah. Now you're the quickest repeat guest of all time.
Wow. That's amazing. I got to say, I love it's a clutch move, the pretend to get coffee move on the family vacation part. I've used that many times myself. Oh, I got a little lost. They ran out of coffee at the first one.
Yeah, it was just like 25 miles farther away than I thought. So,
yeah. So PGA this week. What are you guys excited? What are you looking forward to?
Well, I'm gonna be on site in sweaty St. Louis. I've been begging Porath to join me, but I think he's never given me a definitive no, but you know, I'm pretty sure he's not going. So it's gonna be me and Kyle Porter, among others, sweating it out down there.
I think Andy's going.
I'm coming down tomorrow.
Are you? Exciting.
Quick visit. Maybe going back the weekend. I don't know. We'll see. I'm committing to tomorrow, at least.
Kevin, I'm kind of disappointed you're not there already, right? Pounding out 1,000-word columns on the Clydesdales delivering the Wanamaker trophy.
The one thing I've learned covering the majors is the like 3-day buildup to the majors. And writing 1,000-word columns every single day is not the way to go do majors. The best way to cover majors is to get in Wednesday night and just write about the actual golf.
And then for Andy's purposes, what are you? The opposite, right? You go scout the course,
Yeah.
Get your content and watch, take those learnings and apply them to watching from home. No?
Yeah, I'm the opposite. I'm a early week guy, taking the early week takeaways and applying them to the weekend watching. You know, relating to the everyday guys sitting at home watching on the telecast.
But yeah,
you know, walk the pins, like just, you know, where he thinks the Sunday pins are going to be, and check them with his compass, and make sure that this is accurate.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely want to get a feel for what kind of heat they're going to be dealing with. And Lou Brown actually asked. We've got a special segment here. We've got Gary Player calling in to describe this week's forecast and what players are going to deal with from a weather standpoint in St. Louis.
Andy, thank you very much for having me on the Friday Egg Podcast. As you know, I conquered Belle Reve once far long ago, and it was just as hot and sweaty and disgusting as it will make me be this week. So what I expect is a lot of swamp ass and a lot of guys who are big and brawny hitting the ball very far.
Oh, thanks, Gary. That was a real treat. should be something else. I mean, last year's PGA was much of the same with the weather down in Charlotte in August, and this year will have probably a couple rain delays and a really soft course. In terms of you know, there's all kinds of storylines. I was doing a piece of putting together all of them, and I was wondering, what player do you guys think has the most to gain from a PGA win?
I'm going to defer to Porath here because I got mine in mind, but we'll let
him. We may double up here. Okay. I mean, well, I think from, like, practically speaking, wouldn't the answer be Jordan Spieth?
Ooh, yeah.
I mean, like, I obviously, like, if he doesn't win, like, there's not a big loss. But if he does win, I don't know. I feel like that's a pretty big launching. And, like, who gains more? I mean, I don't know. Tiger?
Yeah, all of a sudden, Major, Jordan. That's a great question. That's a great answer, because then not only does Jordan have as many majors as Rory, but he also has the career Grand Slam. And his entire season, the worst of his career, has been a huge success.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, like, the default answer, I mean, what first percent it goes, Ricky. But I just, because whatever, it just changes a lot of the narrative around him right now. But yeah, I think, like, when you phrase it as most to gain, I think it's Jordan Spieth has the most to gain out of winning this PGA.
I was going to answer something way lamer, like Kyle Stanley or like Patrick Cantlay, like a guy suddenly like an elite ball striker, like taking themselves to the next level. But Porath's answer was like so much better than mine that I'm just embarrassed that I threw those out instead.
I think that's the fascinating thing with this one. You could make a case for like almost probably like 10 players in the field. Like you got Tiger. Tiger would complete like the greatest sports comeback.
Sure.
In recent memory with a win. Mm-hmm. Phil would become the second oldest guy to ever win a major. You'd have, like, you know, I think Dustin Johnson, that's a big question, is like, is 2018 a disappointment for DJ without a major?
I mean, I go back and forth with DJ so much that, you know, are we overrating majors? Like, it's obvious that DJ is like, you know, an amazing player. What if he were to win another 15, 20 tournaments and have 40 wins and only one major? Would his career be a disappointment? Like, I don't know. Like, it seems ridiculous that DJ, if he got like 30 plus wins and 35 wins, would be mentioned in the same breath as Davis Love and Fred Couples, who are going to finish, you know, with 11, 12 wins and one major. Like, but that's the way that majors kind of end up sort of measuring people, right?
DJ doing the summer triple with TPC Southland, Glen Abbey, Belle Reve. It's like, you know, Starberry putting up like triple doubles on a 25 win Knicks team, you know.
It's but a little, like I said,
stats.
It's a little bit depressing that we were like rooting the end of Firestone, and yet it's gonna go to TPC Southwind next year for the Bridgestone. Like, the guys are going to hit wedge in every hole.
It's like a, I don't know if it's an upgrade.
Yeah.
I want to talk. Do you want to talk about? Can we talk about that WGC for a sec?
Yeah. Sure.
It was brutal, wasn't it? I mean, it was boring. Here. I think like part of it is the course, which you have illuminated so well for people over the last few years, Andy. But like, I think another part of it is like the WGCs are just kind of eating their own. Like, it's like everyone's getting too fat and rich to the point where like the golf is not compelling. Like, I just think like, what is the incentive to like? There's strategy involved in the golf course, but there's also some in the golf course you play. But I think there's also some strategy involved. Like, there's a strategy taken out of it when everyone just makes a cut and everyone's guaranteed $50,000, and like everyone that's already in the field is kind of set for life. Like, you know, is already kind of, you know, the rich and the fat of the, you know, living off the walking in high cotton, whatever the bad metaphor you want to use is. Like, I think like there's a lack of interest. The players are kind of, they're lethargic about it.
Yeah.
And think of going from Firestone to TPC Southwind the week exact, like right after the Open. Like, you think guys are going to be just showing up to collect checks and get the hell out of there? Yeah. There's going to be like three or four guys who are maybe trying to play on Sunday, and that's it.
I have
amazing stats.
I would say that
we were talking about. Go ahead, Andy.
No, I would say that the WGCs are the most disappointing thing in golf at this point. You get the best players together right now, and they play a Muni in Mexico. They play a cool match play tournament at a pretty cool course. They play TPC Southwind now moving forward, and then they play, you know, terrible golf course in China that barely anybody shows up to. You know, that's just the world deserves better when the top 70 golfers all come together. I will say, yesterday, I think one of the things that's been lost in all the golf course hate, and I'm probably a chief offender of the golf course hate, is how unbelievably good Justin Thomas is, and how he was playing a different golf course than everybody else in the field. And I did all this number crunching, and I was looking at top 10s, and I started this because I wanted to look at Ricky Fowler specifically, like top 10s compared to wins, you know, long-term, over time. And I found that Justin Thomas has 10 wins and 24 top 10s in his young career. He's at like 37.5% of the time he's in the top, like versus top 10 and win, he wins, you know? So it tells me that when he's at his best, he's probably better than everybody in the game of golf right now. Obviously, the all-time high guy is Tiger, and he's at 66%, which is absolutely nuts.
Am I wrong, though, in the funnest part of watching JT in the whole tournament was when he would get into trouble and when he'd hit, like, ridiculous shots from, you know, I think he curved a wedge with a ball below his feet, like, you know, 20 yards in the air out of the bunker, and then that shot where he hit in the other fairway on Friday, I think, and then curved it back towards, like, those are the kind of things that I want to see from JT, because that's what makes golf fun. And he, when he's playing well, he just is murdering a drive right down the middle and then like hitting an unbelievably towering iron to the green and making putts. Like, it's amazing, but it's like kind of boring to watch over and over again. And I don't know why. Maybe like some of when Rory was doing that seemed a little more compelling, but maybe I'm just seeing so much of it now that I'm numb to it. Like, I was getting all kinds of hate from JT fanboys about pointing that out, when actually I really like Justin Thomas. Like, he's one of my favorite players to watch, but it also just, I want to see him like use the full display of all of his skills, all the arrows in his quiver. Like, we talk about, you know, that Rory can hit like all those different kinds of shots, but why would he learn? Why would he sort of hone them and sharpen them? Because the courses are set up so he doesn't ever really have to, unless he gets into trouble.
I just think, like, as bad as yesterday, kind of yesterday should have had so much more juice given the leaderboard we had. And I just think, like, next year we're overlooking the impact. Like, the WGCs just lack like player enthusiasm for it. And I think next year, going from Royal Port Rush to Memphis, it's going to be, you know.
Players
going to show up, cash their check, and Sunday's going to lack a little more, even more sizzle.
Do you think there's a red eye from, what is it? What's the airport that they have to fly into to Port Rush?
Probably Belfast.
Belfast to Memphis. The regular red eye there. Yeah. The most amazing CSAT that we saw one of our friends put together is Ricky Fowler has played in 27 of them. He has zero wins and has made $4.3 million. So he, like, Arnold Palmer made like $1 million his entire career. Like, the fact that, like, it, obviously the money is way different, but that's nuts to think that that's a great example of how the WGCs are just a money grab, like, cash out. Like, you, yeah, Ricky Fowler's probably had some, like, top tens in there, obviously, but he never won one, and he's made an obscene amount of money, like, four times as much money as Greg Norman made in his entire career. WGC.
So another thing that bothers me, and I started thinking about this, and I couldn't get it out of my head last night, is all right, so they PGA Tour has to know that Firestone is somewhat of a boring golf course, right? But they've set the golf course up the exact same way for the last 15 years. Like, no variation in setup. Like, they have four par threes that all of them are between 185 and 220 yards. But every day, they set them up that distance. Like, you can play a forward tee. You can make one of them 120 yards one day. Like, that would be fun. Like, the 16th hole, like, move it up one day. Make it reachable for everybody one day. Like, that would actually be a somewhat interesting shot where people would have to decide whether to go for it or not, rather than just having, you know, people lay up all day long. Like, how come the PGA Tour never changes setup day to day when they go to the same golf courses every single year and they set them up the exact same way? Like how does this, like, am I crazier? Or is this crazy?
I think it's spot on. I want to, like, a deep dive into who, like, who's doing the setups each day. Like, is it, you know, I don't know. Who is the PGA Tour setup people? Do we know anything about any of them?
It's Mark Russell and Slugger White.
Yeah, it's those, the guys you see come riding in the carts to administer, you know, rulings and things on the
team. Here's a take. Is that because the players are so powerful, it's like what we saw at the Byron Nelson. They're afraid to piss them off.
Right.
They're afraid to say, like, well, screw it. I won't come to this thing if you set this up hard. Whatever. I want it to be what it normally is. Because they would whine and whine and whine and complain if it was something that was abnormal. And you know what? Like, I understand it. They're used to what they're used to. Nothing. There's no incentive for them to want to change. They don't want to look bad. They want to just be comfortable. So much about being golf is being comfortable. And so that's how it is. It's a cycle that feeds itself over and over, right?
Right. I think, like, Andy, like, you're not crazy. This is crazy, but I think we lose sight of who the constituents are. Like, at the end of the day, like, the tour answers to the players, like Roger Goodell answers to the NFL owners, and that's just how it works, you know?
So in some sort of attempt to get this train back on the tracks, you know, we're supposed to talk about the beautiful city of St. Louis and a major championship in St. Louis and the PGA. What if, you know, Brooks Koepka had a great week at Firestone despite putting horribly, and looking at the golf course, I really think that somebody that absolutely bombs the ball is going to win this thing. There's really thick rough and the golf course sets up well for guys that hit it far and high. If Brooks Koepka wins, he'll have won three of the last five majors he's played in, and he will only have one PGA Tour win in his career. Like, does that say something about the PGA Tour setups, or is it more about Brooks Koepka in majors?
Just Brooks Koepka is just a big game hunter. I think it says more about Koepka, in my opinion. I mean, like, he's got the game to win on the PGA Tour and PGA Tour setups. No? I mean, I think it, like, of course, I think it just shows he kind of turns it on, cares more, you know, and turns it on, realizes his full potential on, like, the biggest stages and at the most toughest toughest and challenging venues, and kind of, I think it says more about Koepka that he has, that Ricky has lower odds than he does is kind of an injustice, almost a crime. You know, Ricky's 18-1 and Brooks is 20-1.
How much mark money do you think that like they get on Ricky? Like Ricky's made Vegas so much money from like a lot of like just lame fish betting on Ricky who don't know anything about golf. I bet that Rick has made DraftKings like $5 million himself.
It's I'm in this like this majors pool with my buddies, and a lot of them are like buddies from college, and where there's 32 guys and it's a snake draft every year, right? Or for every major and the WGC match play. That's why there's 32. So all 64 guys get picked. And anyway, so I had like the eighth pick this time around, and it started today. And like I was on a text chain with a couple of my buddies that are, you know, big golf fans, and we're like at pick 6 and Justin Thomas and Brooks haven't been picked yet. And like people were losing their minds, you know, like on this tech chain, like how is Justin Thomas still not been picked? So Justin Thomas ended up going 7 and I got Brooks at 8. And it's just crazy. I mean, Tiger got picked ahead of him. I mean, I think like Spieth obviously is having a bad year, but Fowler got picked number 3. And it's just like, it's kind of crazy. It's just, but this, it gives you a lens into the public opinion of these golfers.
Here's what I think Rick's projection is. And Porath knows this because we were texting about it. I think Rick's going to get his like Sergio major, like when he's almost 40, and that's going to be it. Like he'll, and everyone like, oh, finally, like Ricky Fowler's fulfilled. He's a major champion. But that'll be it. Like I'll think about is all the majors he could have won. That's what I think about with Sergio. Sergio could have won like 7 majors, and he's probably going to end up with 1. His game is trending in a bad direction.
That's why I did all this number crunching. I put it all on Twitter with Ricky. Is like his career looks a lot like Paul Casey's. Not Sergio won 20% of the time that he was in contention. You know, if you look at it that way, like that's a win rate you see with a lot of the superstars. Ricky is at 11%. Paul Casey's at 12. So to me, Ricky's not even, I mean, I don't know. We keep wanting to put him into this generational talent bucket, but yeah. To me, he's more of like he's a player that was like a really good player of an era, not a great player of an era.
Yeah. Well, I think stats don't lie, baby.
Yeah. I'm not the biggest stat guy either.
Thing, real quick. I do think that there is some merit to the idea that if you're the kind of player who has to make like, you know, 20 birdies in a week, Koepka might just be like, yeah, I'm kind of out on that golf. Like, so some of those courses are going to set up, you know, it's like if a guy like Koepka might say like, I want it to be hard. I want it to be sort of, you know, I can muscle it out of the rough when other guys can't. And so maybe that's why majors would sort of set up better for him. Like it's just the tour is too easy for him, for one, for hold his interest, and for two, to not like level the field, like raise the difficulty, and like a really strong, really good player might rise to the top.
So I was thinking about this today when I was looking at these numbers and thinking about Koepka and the PGA Tour, and I don't want this to be taken out of context. It easily can be, like, but I found this comparison, and I'm not sure exactly if it's right on, and obviously like they're all athletes in both scenarios and great athletes, but is the PGA Tour to golf what is to what the WWE is to Olympic wrestling?
That's a take. I don't know.
Oh my god, I mean, that's basically calling the PGA Tour a farce. Like, it's just not.
Like, I think high-level amateur golf, like the summer circuit these kids play high-level amateur golf, plays a better golf courses that test your games more and are set up more towards, like, what championship golf really is versus what the PGA Tour plays week in, week out.
I mean, they're not playing high level amateur golf at 7,400 yards, right?
So I mean, some of them are.
Okay.
Like,
well, I mean, my knowledge of the high level amateur golf is roughly zero. So I'm gonna have to defer to you. I don't know.
This is something I thought.
You're getting back to your point about. I think this is kind of all getting back. Like, there's a theme in this entire pod, the front half of this pod, about WGCs kind of eating their own and setups, like, are like beholden to the constituents that are the players. It's kind of like this. I don't know. It's a very like closed door party that it's the way they want it to be. Of course, there's access. You can get a card, and you can, you know, you play well enough, you get there. But like, it's more or less a closed system, and it's not a closed system, but it's the party that they want to throw, and it's kind of exclusive, and it's the way they want it to be. It's how they want the Birdie Fest courses, they want the way they want it set up, and it just yields a kind of golf that maybe we don't like. And I think that's getting back to everything, just the WGCs being too, like, just seeming lethargic and people disinterested, and you know, the no variety in courses or setups. The players are the constituents. You don't need to be, we've seen, like, you don't need to be like an adversary. Like USGA is in an adversarial posture with the players. The RNA is not an antagonistic posture, but like, they're also not, you know, beholden in part and parcel with the players, like the PGA Tour is. So, like, I think, like, the PGA Tour is the way it is for a reason, and I don't think, like, we're the only ones that are complaining, and like, the people who are throwing the party have it set up exactly how they want it.
I'm gonna go in on Annie's take, though, on the WWE thing. Here's where I'm gonna go. So, if that's true, then, like, Tiger is essentially like The Rock, like the biggest superstar that the WWE has ever produced or whatever. All right. And so if you have a charismatic superstar, it covers up all of your other ills. And so when The Rock then sort of left the WWE, which I don't follow it that closely. So there was like a void of like, well, who's going to be like our star? Like, I think a lot less people, you know, maybe were plugged in and cared about the WWE. And so they needed to sort of evolve and like develop other superstars or whatever. And I think that the risk that you run is if you think that one person is going to carry you and make up for all of your, you know, so deficiencies, then when that one person leaves, you run the risk of a lot of people being like, well, actually, this isn't that fun. Actually, this is kind of lame. Like, that one guy made it seem more fun, which was the truth of Firestone for a long time. And then when it wasn't, it was like the sheet had been pulled back, and all of a sudden everyone's like, ugh, I don't want to watch this. And that's what I fear, that, like, I don't think that the majority of golf fans right now are disinterested in the PGA Tour. Like, we are, in the sense of, like, we're a little bit frustrated with the sameness to it. But I think there's a potential tipping point that maybe we're sort of ahead of the curve and saying, like, if you don't change up some things, then you run the risk of all of a sudden people being like, man, this is boring. I don't want to, now that Tiger's retired, I find this exhausting.
Belatedly, I don't know if you saw, Tiger and Phil are looking at making this thing kind of a series with multiple players and two-man games. I don't know if you saw that report today, this magic stuff.
I didn't see that either.
There's out there, you know, maybe a competing product somewhere down the line. Who knows?
I mean, the fact that they're putting it at Shadow Creek is kind of fun to me. That's a course that no one ever sees, so... You know, at least it'll be a different look for things.
Yeah,
like Foz. Is that Foz?
I mean, I'm not the biggest Foz fan, but like, yeah, it's actually interesting because I will be excited to see Shadow Creek and PGA Tour pros play it. Just like, I mean, like, I think about the PGA Tour schedule, and after the majors, I would say that Riviera is the best event.
Yep.
And yeah. Like, to me, it's not a surprise that it's played at the best golf course that they play four rounds at every year, you know?
Yeah. I was thinking today, to get us back to the PGA, is just kind of like the fatigue of the whole like PGA Tour season. Do you remember when we were at Riviera and like the announcement came out that Tiger Rory and JT were all playing together. Like, I, like, gasped. I, like, dropped my phone. I was like, oh, my God. Like, this is – and I know I'm in the whatever. I follow this for a living, and, like, I don't know. I can be jaded about it. But, like, that literally, like, stirred my emotions. I was like, this is amazing. This is so great. Like, they're playing again this week. I'm just like, eh. You know, it's like the just the season, the grind of a PGA Tour season. Obviously, we've now been able to watch Tiger play a full season.
So
it's just, I don't know. It just lost, the supergroup thing lost so much sizzle compared to that Riviera announcement.
Do you think that the move to May then, because of that fatigue and that season-long thing, is a good move for the PGA?
I think in that respect it is. I think overall, I think like the PGA Tour kind of pulled one over on them. I think in that respect it is. Like they could maybe kind of push, wedge their way into some sort of new identity, and there's much more enthusiasm and anticipation around it falling in May. But again, like there's a lot of other sports going on and a lot of other like competing interests. More than just like preseason football. So I think like in that respect, from our very narrow point of view, like the PGA might, there might be more enthusiasm and anticipation around it, but overall, I don't love the move.
I think it'll make the PGA to me feel more relevant because it will, you know, when we have two majors in that there's a possibility that someone could win two majors and be going for the third at the US Open, which has never haven't happened really in our lifetime. And, you know, having the best major, the British, you know, be the final major of the year was, I think, also kind of fun. But, Parth, I just want to call back to remember when at Riviera when we walked and we walked with the Penn State truther guy who was there to see Tiger, which was the most bizarre random media sighting. That guy who writes all the, like, Joker was framed stuff.
And he was,
that's the most bizarre, like random media person sighting ever. That's how big of a draw Tiger was. He brings out the truthers.
That was crazy. There was like 80 people following Tiger, 80 media people following Tiger that week in that group, which on a Thursday morning. I remember how packed that just the whole like crowd was on a Thursday morning. Like that doesn't usually happen, which is surprising. I think the other thing is that gives the schedule a little bit of benefit is like the cadence of it. Like, so you have the biggest, sure, the biggest non-tour event, which is the Players in March. And then you, 1 month later, you got the Masters. 1 month later, you have the PGA. 1 month later, like it puts it on a regular schedule. But that being said, like going up against the NHL and NBA playoffs, not good at all.
I don't think it's going to do anything for the general fatigue we feel about the playoffs either. I mean, just because the playoffs are now in August and not going up against football. Like, I think, like, we're still just going to be kind of burnt out by then. You know, it's like guys playing for $10 million purses. And,
people going to their lake house, you know.
Yeah.
All right, and here's a question for you. What would be the three ideal PGA May courses then? If we have new courses in play and you can set up moving forward and anything is in play, as long as it can have the actual tents and all that stuff, what would be the ideal three courses that you would want it to see it at?
Riviera.
Okay.
LACC.
Uh-huh.
And then I guess we'll go with, I don't know. I wouldn't mind seeing Chambers Bay.
Yeah, Chambers.
I just put them all on the West Coast. Like,
yeah.
Like I'm like, I don't want to go. I don't want Kiowa.
Okay.
I don't want anything in Dallas other than like Trinity Forest. Okay. Or Texas for that matter. Like,
yeah.
Sorry, Texas. I'm going to get a lot of emails about that. Florida, like nothing really does it for me. It's not, Seminole is not going to be opening the doors. Georgia, there's nothing in there that's going to host, you know, a PGA. Like, I don't want to see it at East Lake. Do you guys?
No.
I think
on the track with Riviera, all the ACC. I mean, those are two.
I mean, as bad as it sounds, like, I mean, if it was at Riviera every year, I'd be like thrilled. That would never happen. And it would cannibalize the Genesis Open, but it would be the best case scenario.
Go back to Salehi.
Zahali?
Zahali, that's right. It's not getting pronounced. It's been so long. What's the deal there? That they just don't have enough room. It was like played like 67 or something back then.
A little tight.
It was real tight with the big tall trees. I've walked that once for like a buddy of mine was covering like junior am thing there, and so I walked it, and the trees were beautiful. It was, you know, I know a lot of anti-tree sentiment on this podcast, but
we'd have to restock tree management shirts that we, you know, I'd be out there giving them away.
After hearing about the Firestone Dutch Elm disease incident over by CBS, I think you need shirts that say support Dutch Elm disease.
That one might go too far.
A little too far.
And people don't realize I was an environmental science major. I love trees. I just don't love them on golf courses. Yeah.
Honestly, I think Chambers got a bad rap in the way that it sort of played out there. And I think eventually they got to go back to Chambers, give him another shot, you know, whether it's in May or whatever.
Somebody said something about a idea of like giving it all the modern, I can't remember who, and I apologize for that, but like all modern major hosts as the PGA's thing, you know?
Yeah.
And the problem, but this is the other problem with the May date. Like, it's going to be really interesting next year with Bethpage because, like, there weren't, like, leaves on trees in the beginning of May. Like, and it's not about, like, the weather. Everybody's like, oh, well, the average high is 65 or 67 or whatever it is, the date. It's about, like, the amount of time you have to grow grass and actually have healthy grass that's ready for a major championship. And I think that's one of the problems is with the date change, you eliminate, you know, the unpopular real dilemma with golf is that the majority of the best golf courses in the country are located between, you know, Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, and northeast of there. Like, that's where all the great golf courses are for the most part. The Midwest has a lot of great ones too, but that one's out of it with the date change also. Like, you know, Oakland Hills is no longer a potential host with this date. Inverness in Ohio isn't a host. Anything in Chicago can't host in May and have like really good agronomic conditions. And when you think about championship golf, those are where all the great courses are. So it leaves you with the West Coast and the Southeast.
Yeah.
So we're talking about future PGAs and not the one at hand.
I will say that that's one thing I appreciate about this one is like, and this is a very peripheral concern and not, you know, germane to what you cover, Andy, is like, it is good to go to a market like this that probably doesn't get pro golf. Now, I understand the course may not be up to snuff, but I thought it was like, it looked like the crowds were pretty good for Monday, and like I think people there are fired up about it, and you know, St. Louis I think is a fine enough sports town, and I think that's like good to have a pro golf tournament going to the very middle of the country into a market that hasn't had anything in 20 years or more.
I agree. Look at what happened when the Solheim Cup went to Cedar Rapids.
Yeah.
Or was it Des Moines? It was Des Moines, right?
I think that's right.
I mean,
when they go to that marathon event, the women LPGA in Toledo, or you know, Arkansas, like people get into these events if it's like their hometown event, pro sports event,
especially markets that don't usually get big events.
Sure.
Am I correct in remembering that when Gary Player won in Bellerive and whatever it was, that gave him the career Grand Slam, and he had it before Nicklaus? Is that, I think I read that.
A year before.
That blew my mind when I was like, really? Like, Gary Player got the career Grand Slam before Jack Nicklaus? Like, you know, I think of them
Gary's a little older, and so I just think of them as sort of contemporaries. But still, that's kind of a neat piece of history there. He was like only the third guy or whatever to do it at that point, or fourth guy. So.
I think there's only one real fix to this whole problem with the PGA.
Okay.
It needs to go back to match play. Go back, embrace their history. All right, so bear with me. Sunday's going to stink, but Sunday stinks for the PGA right now. You know, every day stinks right now for the PGA, like in comparison to the other majors. All right, but if you made it like 36 holes of qualifying, stroke qualifying, and then you cut it to the top 32 and you do match play in, you could make an argument that if you did 36 holes on Saturday, where it was the round of eight to the four to the finalists, that Saturday and Friday would be the two best days of major championship golf of the year.
Yeah, it would
be. You went from having the four worst days to two of the best days. Like, that's a huge win.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would be exhausting to play 36 on Saturday or whatever, right? Like, I mean, they do it, I guess, anyway for the match play, so it's not like it's totally foreign to them, and they're not carrying their bags, so why not? Yeah, let's do it.
They're moving it into May. I mean, it's less, like, they're not coming right up Firestone and doing all that stuff anymore. I don't know.
Give them carts. I don't give a shit. Give them something, you know? Let them push carts.
It's just the most simple, easiest fix they have. How is there not a match play major? There's a reason the PGA was a match play tournament from the start. Variety, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you've got your Invitational. You've got your big U.S. championship. You've got your big championship of, like, you know, the British Islands. And then you have your match play championship. It makes so much sense.
It really does.
Change.
Go ahead.
Do we know what year did it change?
Like 1970, I want to say.
There's probably sports writers are behind this. They bullied the PGA into turning it into it was probably like, I don't know. Trying to think of who would have been, you know, in the 70s would have been like a big, powerful sports writer. Herman Bischer, something. Jenkins, everything. Because that's the way it worked. Like, so one of my biggest gripes in golf history is that sports writers, like, got together and decided that, like, the Western Open was no longer a major. And they're like, you know, the Sarah's are, like, just lost, like, all of the majors that he had sort of won. Like, it's just the fact that, like, you could win, like, a bunch of majors, like, back in the day, and then all of a sudden they didn't count, you know, like, it's just crazy to me. And that was sports writers that decided that.
Well, now we got bloggers and podcasters coming around to force it back into match play.
Yeah. I love it.
The last time I played golf, I got to the course without my greater than. Sure enough, I had a back nine fade after an even par 35 on the front, put up a nice little 41 on the back. The best way to fight fatigue on the golf course is to stay hydrated, and the best way to stay hydrated is with Greater Than. Check out Greater Than at drinkgt.com and use the promo code THEFRIEDEGG for 20% off your first order. That's drinkgt.com. So let's get this train back on track. And we got a really good question here from Sean Roadhorst. Does Rory stink?
Oh my gosh!
I enjoyed your note in the newsletter this morning about how
that was Will Knights.
Oh, Will Knights! How his wedges are just like they're inexcusable disgrace. It was very strong language. I liked it. Like, it's like this can't go on much longer.
Rory in 14, I looked this up a while back. He was like proximity to the hole, like. Like from 125 yards, he was like fourth in strokes gained. And he's never been, that is the only year that he's ever been in like the top 100. So like, how did that one outlier, like what was he doing that year that made him so much better? Was it the wedges he was playing? Was it the ball? Was it, you know, just the way that he sort of, I don't know, like looked at that, like what was happening that one year that he was so good at it? Why can't he be like just half of that? Why can't he like rank like 50th in strokes gained from 120 yards?
So one thing is that I feel like the majority of the PGA Tour has caught up to Rory's prodigious length. And we saw that yesterday at when we were watching the Bridgestone. You know, everybody was hitting the ball 400 yards. Like, it's not a big thing anymore. So Rory used to get wedge opportunities where nobody else got them. And now everybody gets wedge opportunities.
That's a big part of it. I don't know. That's...
What's going on over there?
Sorry, as I was typing some things. Is that showing up on the podcast here? I apologize.
You got to throw the mute on if you're going to just hammer away.
I just wanted to continue to make this the top quality production that it always has been.
You were filling in for Smartin admirably in that aspect.
Darn it! I was so close, and now, yeah.
That's part of the tradition. This is a casual conference call vibe. Always has been.
Why are Rory's wedges so, like, why can't they be what they are in 14? Does he need to watch some film? Do we need to get him those old Nike wedges? Those Nike Vapor things or whatever they were? I don't know.
I don't know. It's just a different... the Sunday fade was really kind of disappointing. I thought for sure... I think he walked out of 14 thinking like, wow, there's really just like, I am the guy of the next era.
Yeah.
And then Spieth came along so fast, and like ran away with the Masters, won the U.S. Open, and now like whatever. DJ kind of got his acting gear a little bit more. Justin Thomas, all of a sudden, like I think this is getting like kind of far afield from the specific wedges issue, but like I don't think he expected it to be this competitive this fast. I think he thought he was kind of, I don't know, to use a hackneyed term now, the alpha of the next kind of generation. And I think that really got a lot deeper, a lot faster than he anticipated walking out of 2014.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. Like his approach to green numbers have declined, like his rank every year since 2014, you know? He was like habitually, you know, one of the best on tour, and you know, where he was top 30 guys strokes gained approach, and now he's, you know, in the 60s and 70s in strokes gained approach. And I always think back, it's like, I think Shackelford had a post up this last night on his site about, you know, distance numbers and how like last year, 10 guys hit averaged over 310, and this year, 15 guys have averaged over 310. And we haven't even gotten to the part of the season where they hit the ball the furthest, which is the FedEx Cup, when the courses are more dialed in, they aren't as wet. So, like, yeah, we're on a record pace of guys. So more and more guys hit the ball really far, which was Rory's, like, big thing. I mean, Rory's the greatest, you know, probably the greatest driver of the golf ball of this generation. And I think that... Yeah. That skill is becoming more commoditized with today's game of golf, you know, and that's not as big of a differentiator. It's a huge differentiator from like the short guys on tour to the long guys, but there's way more long guys now than there ever were before. So it becomes more about which guys are really long and also just as elite with their wedges or, you know, putter.
So does he stink?
No, he doesn't stink.
That was the question.
I think putting is in his head. Like I wish that he had more committed to that sort of facts and method of like, screw it. I'm just going to be athletic and just putt. And where he won Bay Hill and was like, that's the Rory that I think he needs to find that center again. And, you know, eventually over time, if he's able to feel comfortable in that, to me, it's when he overthinks, overreads it. Just be aggressive. Hit it a few feet past if you have to. Make those coming back. You'll be fine. You're going to give yourself enough chances. I want to be Rory's mental coach. That's what I want to be. He needs a social media person and a mental coach.
I would tell Rory what I do is I've started to sing Comfortably Numb by Pink Floyd while I hit any type of golf shot.
Interesting.
It's actually been liberating. But, you know, I haven't been playing
Van Morrison, the Van Morrison cover version or the one, the actual Pink Floyd.
Pink Floyd.
I love the Van Morrison cover version.
Yeah. It's actually been, you know, it gets my mind. I've putted better because I don't think about putting, you know. Right. I've always struggled with putting. So so who are you guys picking for this week?
Good question.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Rory won. Like, he'd be in my list of four favorites.
Totally. I think as wacky as his season has been, as much as he sort of regressed on Sunday, he's definitely, I think, trending in better direction. Like, he played really well at the Open. And so, you know, he just wasn't quite good enough on Sunday. Was kind of too far back. But I'm going to pick a wild horse or whatever. I'm going to say Patrick Cantlay. I think it's, we're due for like a surprise PGA Tour winner, like a not, we're going to get back-to-back majors of guys who you would not have necessarily thought were going to win a major until they did.
Interesting. I like that. I was going to say Justin Thomas, but now, like, after Firestone, I feel like that's just too facile, like too easy to do. I don't have my pick yet. It's Monday night. I got to figure this out. I mean, what about Paul Casey?
Okay.
I got to sell myself on him.
You talked yourself out of it already.
I'm going to probably stay with Justin Thomas. I think that's the smartest and best play. It feels like the PGA could be his major. Yeah. Like, for the, whatever, decade based on the news.
Real quickly, can Justin Thomas win the Masters and the Open Championship with his current game? Like, does his game need to evolve a little bit more, or am I just like overthinking this and that he's, you know, he just hasn't gotten in contention either of those majors?
Yes, I think he can win with it. I think Justin Thomas is unbelievably good. I obviously, as evidenced by his what, 8 wins over the last 2 years now.
Yeah.
But I think just when you look at his game, his career arc, and like how he's progressed and how he's improved, like, I think he's in the top 40 of every strokes gained metric. So off the tee, approach, around the green, and putting. And that, I mean, if he does 3 of them well in a week, nobody has a chance.
Yeah.
And that's so, what we saw at Firestone. You know, he drove it great and he wedged it great. Like, how are you going to beat that guy?
Yeah.
So if Rory, Jason Day, and JT, like, I feel like that's like your PGA, like if you like designed a PGA championship player in a lab, like those are your, like the guys you, especially for even this week, that's like the perfect kind of player for this kind of test.
See, our conversation, this is what's great about this PGA, is our conversation earlier about like who has the most to gain, because I think what we just talked about with Rory could have the most to gain.
Yeah.
You know,
that's not a bad point.
JT, if he wins, he's one major behind Spieth.
Yeah.
And
I think, well, Jason Day, if he wins, could completely reset the last few years of like all of a sudden him, Jason Day having 2 majors, like he should have at least 2 majors by now. He was the number one player in the world for a while. Like, he was by far and away, when he won that PGA, he was by far and away the best player in the world in that moment. Like, that guy, whatever happened to him, like, it was injury or just he can't sustain it being the guy who swings it like out of your shoes every single time. I don't know. I think that would reset a lot about Jason Day, I think, in our minds.
Yeah. I would say Jason Day also, yeah, like he would, that second win in a major ties him for second most of an Australian all time with Greg Norman. Yeah. Like, he's only behind Peter Thompson then. I mean, Dustin Johnson, same thing, you know. Second major for DJ is huge. You know, he's beyond. I don't get excited about a DJ regular PGA Tour win anymore.
Yeah.
Like, wait.
It's time for some majors for DJ. That's what's the only thing that's going to get me excited about him, I think. Him hitting 400-yard drives doesn't excite me, but him winning like another major would be great.
Here's why the PGA Championship is underrated. Because 20 years from now,
full circle.
Yeah. 20 years from now, we don't look at like players and say, well, they won 3 PGAs, so those count as 1.5 majors.
Yeah.
They all count the exact same.
Yeah. It's true. So I think PGA should count for 0.75 majors, personally. But the US Open should count for like 1.5.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, like, I was going to go the other direction with your day take. If he has a Whistling Straits and Belrive major, it counts as one.
but you would say that now, but you know, when Brendan Porath is writing about golf and has, you know, some acute liver damage from all the monsters he's drank over the years, he will remember Jason Day. He'll be writing about the good old days when players weren't like Jason Day now, you know? Like, let me tell you about how great Jason Day was.
You're right.
All you Cold Hammer fans, you whatever. What's like?
You're right.
It's all right. So I'm gonna go with the Koepka. I'm rooting for Koepka. I'm all in on this. I really want the three major winner with one PGA Tour win. And I think he putted so bad. Putting is a week to week thing. He hit the ball great at Firestone. And I think Belrive sets up so perfect for him. I guess the rough is really, really thick. So I just don't see anybody that doesn't hit it 310 plus winning this week.
Can I ask you, what do you think like we're looking at for scores this week? Like, is this like, he's talked about how he's perfectly cool just hitting into the middle of the greens and playing out. Obviously, he wanted Aaron Hills, so the scores were, you know, part doesn't matter, but scores were better. Like, what do you see kind of this championship being?
I think 6-12 is my guess. Is that too big of a range?
It's a big.
If you want me to tighten it up, I'll go 8-12.
Okay.
That's pretty standard for PGA, right? Like, it's pretty rare for PGA to be, you know, 1-5 or, like, deeper than. You know.
Yeah. Jason Day, what, set the records? What did Jason Day get, to 20 or something?
He got to 20, but then I think he bogeyed the last, didn't he, to get it to 19 or something?
Yeah.
Finished 19 or something.
It's thick. You know, like the rough's really thick. It's not an easy golf course. It's going to be soft, most likely. The greens, that's something that's interesting, is that the members haven't been playing on the greens all year.
Yeah,
it's been closed all year for it. Like,
they've been playing to temporary greens because I think last year, as I understand it, last year they lost the greens.
Huh.
And then when, you know, media hit the ground this week, you know, today I saw a lot of people taking pictures of the greens and being like, this doesn't look that good. So it might not be like, I don't know, the putting might be a little bit, it'll be interesting to see how the conditions are. Like, you're not going to be dealing with, like, I think a pristine putting, you know, green that you see at a lot of PGA Tour events or like the Masters. Like, that's not going to be Belrive this week.
So, I mean, I know groundskeepers are kind of your constituents. I never feel like that's like one of the hardest jobs. Like, I never.
Yeah.
It's like impossible. Like, the people are just always bitching about something or other. I don't know, that can't happen if you have a major. I mean, like, well, you know it's coming.
It's St. Louis in August,
right? I know nothing. Yeah.
It's just not a great time. Like, if you want to play golf in St. Louis, like, October's great, May's great. Like, August it's kind of bad. It's gonna be, as Gary said, it's gonna be very hot.
I can't believe you guys got Gary Player on this podcast. This is an amazing get. I mean, I don't know what, he doesn't even own a cell phone, right? He just called in. That was amazing.
Yeah.
I think I'm sure the media will blow it out of proportion, is all I'll say. Because that's what, you know, we get worked up about fescue being chopped back a few feet, you know. It's just what we get upset, what we feed on. So
what's your guys' favorite PGA memory of the last, like, five PGAs.
Mm-hmm.
Five PGAs. That's unfair. It's easy to queue one up if you could take the whole accounting of things.
Yeah, I had to eliminate Tiger Bob May from any consideration.
Jimmy Walker playing Lift Clean in Place on 36 holes on Sunday to win his The first major under Lift Clean and Play.
So fitting. I covered that solo. None of you all were there. So you don't get to talk about the Jimmy Walker experience. All right? That's like you don't talk about a war that you didn't serve in. I was there for that. That was, I still have to talk to my therapist about the Strahl. Man. I mean, Rory dusting the field in Kiowa was pretty amazing. We were talking, Andy and I were talking about it in the podcast last time about how Rory went like 66, 675, yeah. 66, 68. Like, it was the most Rory major ever, maybe. Just that one horrendous round and then just completely boat raced everyone.
I like my favorite memory is like Bernd Wiesberger, like just barely existing in 2014. Like literally just not even, he's like a marker for the final group. Like you got Ricky Phil like playing ahead and then like Wiesberger's just there. I felt terrible for the guy. All of a sudden he's got to play up the 18th in the dark. Like
that was a memorable moment though, that 18th sure. at dark, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's a legit. That's
I don't think people like really realize how close Rory was to hitting in the water off that tee shot. Like that shot was like 3 feet from being in the water and completely blowing that PGA for him because he was insistent on hitting that tee shot. But it wasn't. It stayed up, and then he bullied Phil into playing through.
That moment sticks with me, but I go back to the Kiowa PGA, and I think about Ernie's tough luck in majors all the time, where he finished runner-up to Vijay and Tiger in like three or four consecutive majors back in the day. I mean, David Lynn finished runner-up to Rory.
I hope we can get David Lynn on the next week's podcast to talk about the slander that he faced. Now, two Friday podcasts in a row, David Lynn's tossed in the dumpster.
He would go right alongside like Sean McKeel as the most obscure major champions of all time.
Yeah, that was absolutely true.
I don't remember anything else that David Lynn ever did in his career other than finish runner-up in that major.
Don't you think as much as we talk about like this is going to be set up for someone who hits 300 yards, has that kind of eliminated those like surprise majors and some like will we ever see a Ben Curtis win a major again or Sean McKeel or like a total like a guy who's ranked outside the top 100 basically? I mean, wasn't Ben Curtis like ranked 500th in the world or something in that moment when he won?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Win a date with Todd Hamilton.
Todd Hamilton hybrids all the way around. That I don't think anybody's gonna ever win a major hitting hybrids into par fours anymore.
Or yeah. I think that's a good point. I don't know. God, it seems less prevalent, but I have to look at it. I'm trying to think of the last like super fluky major winner we had. I mean, like Jimmy Walker, as much shit as you want to give him, was like a legit superstar talent. I mean, not super. I mean, legit top of the world talent. So
that's the thing is like we haven't had. I mean, Danny Willett and Jimmy Walker are. I mean, the next one would be, I mean, Duffner. I wouldn't consider Duffner really fluky either.
No, he's good. Yeah, he was good.
Yeah. Keegan was kind of fluky, right? I mean, nobody really knew who Keegan was. It wasn't like he had a great amateur career or like anything that you would, that was kind of out of the blue. And Keegan has progressed in the to kind of what it was.
Is Cabrera a fluke in the sense that he won two majors? Is it a fluke that happened twice?
Two majors and a military tribute. Like, he's never actually won an event, a regular event.
The military tribute.
It's that's the thing is there haven't been many fluky. That could be a byproduct of it. There is less variability in the golf tournament because it's almost a prerequisite to hit it 300 yards unless you're Zach Johnson.
I hope Koepka's career finishes with like five majors and two PGA Tour victories. Like,
that's what I'm saying. It could
be ideal.
Like, I mean, that's kind of a crazy thing to have happen.
Yeah.
Is it because
what do you think it says more about him or the tour? I don't know that you answer that.
I think it says more about the PGA Tour.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that it shows that the setups are soft and that it I don't think it necessarily, and I think when you play true championship golf, it really usually identifies the big dogs and who's the best players in the world at that time. I think when, and I maybe I'm overblowing majors, I don't know, but like his major record and his PGA Tour record, there's something wrong there. You know, the guy is just an absolute beast in major championships. He was really good on the European Tour too, and then, you know, on the PGA Tour, like, he's like average. He's like a middle of the road PGA Tour player.
I don't know. I mean, Tiger used to say he had no interest in playing the birdie fests, where, you know, where he had to shoot 20 to win. He wanted to play the hard ones, but he still won. He won so often that I don't know that really, the facts quite add up.
I think you can never consider Tiger Woods in any, you know, comparison to anybody.
Yeah.
Like, that's, it's crazy, but I don't know. I guess, like, that's like, I know that the thing with the tour is that they have parameters that they set a tournament up in, and everything's within a certain parameter and nothing goes outside the box.
Yeah.
You know, and I would say that the major championship setups are typically outside of that parameter box that the PGA Tour has.
I think they should start giving more control over to like title sponsors to do like course setup. Ooh. Start getting things real tricked up, all weird. You got like big Jim Justice walking in,
nice.
You know, putting like windmills on, you know, holes, and like, they should just start like seeding. Tour should start seeding control to like the horse, the host, sponsor, and course.
So you just that the CEO interview on Sundays would be a lot more interesting too.
There you go.
But that's real dangerous because you can't just cede it to the wild CEOs. Then you got to cede it to all CEOs. And some of those CEOs are like the most boring, whitest dudes in the country. So like, what if they set up the most vanilla setup possible? Like they already, or maybe they already are doing that kind of thing. Like it's possible the setups could get worse in that scenario. It's a big risk from Borat there. Yeah, sure. Maybe Bob Parsons wants to sponsor a tournament and make it like crazy kaboom baby on every hole, but you know,
he might make it, you know, mandatory to become a troop for the week.
You got like the guy from Valspar like going like Boise State on the greens, like making them different colors.
Love
just get a little wacky.
All right, let's get into overrated, underrated, unless you guys have any parting things or thoughts that you want to talk about the PGA.
No,
I mean, this I was more at like, if we're doing the St. Louis thing, I was like, my enthusiasm for this was like an 8-8, 7-9 Jeff Fisher Ram season. But I've come around to that, like more of the, you know.
Your 10-6 Steelers season, maybe?
Fastest show on tour, you know, whatever. Maybe we'll get some good players. And
like Mart's era kind of Ram?
Yeah, yeah.
Like just letting Mark Bulger get creamed.
Like a crappy NFC West division title, but like an early exit in the playoffs. So,
you know, I look at the players, and I look at so many of them, if they don't win a major, if they don't win this major, like you could make a case that they've had a really bad season.
Yeah.
You know, and there's so many big names that haven't won a major, like just because of the way it is now with so many superstars in quotes and so few majors, that that's the captivating thing about the PGA. It's glory's last chance, you know, last shot.
I think maybe PGA Championship underrated.
This is major.
We at the beginning, we sort of were kind of down on the PGA, and now we've really talked ourselves into it being super important.
Well, that's the thing. It's a major championship, and those are special, and they're only 4 weeks a year. Like, as much as apathy as you can have about different things around it, like, it's a major championship, and there are only 4 a year.
Yep.
Not to bring this ship down, but TNT, overrated, underrated.
I'm gonna punt on this. I don't know that I'm allowed to comment on other networks.
Well, I do not need to punt. I mean TNT, like, before bashing coverage became a thing, TNT was annually the worst broadcast of the year. Like, yeah. Annually. And, like, they're in a tight spot. You got to, like, cater to the host organization so you get the things with, like, you know, the playing tips from Michael Breed just kind of hammering you over the head when, you know, players are actually playing golf. You know, you do the PGA professional stuff. Like, you got to kind of serve the host organization. But, like, it's just it's I mean, the experts before I started doing this for a living would always say it was the worst broadcast of the year. And I think it's kind of held that mantle. It's just a lot of commercials, a lot of just like fluff mixed in. I love Ernie Johnson. He's great. But it's just a different, you get like the CBS production with a lot of kind of PGA of America fluff. It's not great.
Yeah, it's abysmal. I mean, TNT knows drama, but they do not know how to showcase golf drama. I don't think you should be allowed to telecast a golf event if you don't telecast any other golf events for an entire year. Like, you're just not going to be good at it.
Yeah.
Like Tiger says, you need reps.
That's true.
Like, it's let alone a major.
Yeah, that's true. We've talked. Our friend Shane Bacon talks about how much better that their crew is now that they've gotten to do like the USAM and the Women's AM and the, you know, like the, even that thing where the PGA professionals go out and play against one another. Like, you do it together a lot and you get better at it. You're right. You can't be good unless you actually, you know, get the reps. So.
Sounds like they're getting that Tiger versus Phil match, by the way, TNT.
Hey. They know drama. I can't wait for that match because then, you know, it'll be like the NBA playoffs where I fall asleep with the coverage on and I wake up and charms on.
Well, that's that's the other thing. You know how Fox goes live at 9 a.m.? Like, TNT comes on at like 11. Yeah. You know, Tiger goes off at 8:20. And, like, we have to watch 4 episodes of SVU and – you know, Charmed and Bones and all this other, like, TNT, like, doesn't have stuff going on Thursday and Friday morning, but like they just like bleed you out and wait until like 11 a.m. I think.
I really enjoyed the part where Porath gave like a really nuanced long thing and then Andy was just like, yeah, it's abysmal. Abysmal is the word of the podcast. All right, let's do more overrated, underrated.
Overrated, underrated. Nelly.
I had to hear a lot of Nelly having covered the Ravens for all those years. That was Ray Lewis's thing. He'd come out to hot in here. And so I definitely got weary of it. Definitely would say overrated. But I did hear like a Glee Club version of hot in here once that was like really enjoyable. It made me like rethink it. So not going to like completely trash it, but mostly I'd say overrated.
Well. Yeah, I mean, talking about hot in here is like talking about like 2015 Tiger Woods versus like 2000. Like, now I don't know why hot in here became a big thing. Like, Country Grammar is one of the greatest rap songs of all time. I remember exactly where I was when I heard it for the first time. Air Force Ones is good.
Batter Up. The Fish Don't Fry in the Kitchen.
I remember being a sophomore in high school, Country Grammar came on.
Yeah.
Like, I remember exactly, like, that song, like, whatever, it got played a lot. But if you listen to that now, like, you would still think that's good.
Oh, yeah. Out of high school straight into the pros? I mean,
Nelly for that song alone is underrated. Like, that is an all timer.
Nelly, it's a good take. Nelly, I was about the same age, and I'll never forget my buddy had like one of the first disc drives that could rewrite CDs. So he just burned all of our buddies, you know, Nelly, Country Grammar. Yeah. And we blasted that. Nelly's got a special place in my heart, even though he's from St. Louis. I will say St. Louis, way underrated. I'm a huge Cubs fan, but man, they love Cardinal baseball way more than like any. It's even healthy to love it, you know.
Sure.
So good sports city, actually. So Overrated, underrated slogans for major championships.
Overrated, of course. I mean, this is like, the issue is when you try to find something that's subjective and like force it down our throat and make it objective. Like, there's just like this, you know, glory's last shot is just like, it's just like a nonsense, like subjective, crazy marketing term. Live under par. Like, what? Who got paid to do that? Like, you just say we have the strongest field in golf. That's an objective truth. We have the strongest field in major championship golf. They invite the top 100 every year without fail. Like, that just, like, you don't need to say this is major. You don't need to say, like, glory's last shot. Like, the problem is you get these marketing people, like, that's how you get from the toughest test in golf to now the ultimate test in golf for the U.S. Open. Like, it's just, stop trying to, like, play with words and just say what you are.
I love it. All right. I would say underrated in their, like, mockery. Like, I enjoy I enjoy making lots of wisecracks about, I sent a note to Colin Porter this year, and I was like, hey, are you going to be at the fifth major for the PGA? And he's like, fifth? We're like the seventh. So I want to be, I'm going to hashtag a bunch of stuff like seventh major. 2018 seventh major champion is Xander Schauffele.
What was worse, glory's last shot or this is major?
This is major. It's not even close. I mean,
I don't know. I think glory's last shot is horrible.
I mean, yeah, glory's last shot is so like, oh, just like treacly and purple, like dumb. It's like a gymnasium. But this is major is so base and stupid. I mean, I'm not sure. Like, I think we've overinflated like that thing's history. I did that last more than like a year. I think it lasted like a year, but like it will last forever in our hearts and minds.
Someone built a second home in Malibu based on this is major. That's infuriating. Like, it can't be that hard to be a marketing guy if that's what you come with. Live under par and this is major and glory's last shot are like winning campaigns.
Yeah, it, like anything, usually things are the best when they just naturally happen.
Right.
So right. They should just let it naturally go. I think they're starting to do that. I think they started to realize, like,
yeah.
Hey, we. Yep. It's like the why there's a backlash to the President's Cup and why, you know, people hate when you say that the Players is the fifth major. Because if you try and force something,
yeah,
it's not going to work out. We haven't talked about Tiger at all, which is kind of absurd.
Surprising, actually. Yeah.
Does he have any shot this week?
Tiger season, overrated, underrated.
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 I didn't think that guy was ever going to play golf again like 10 months ago.
He led a major on the back nine on Sunday. He made the cut at the Masters.
He's playing golf. Like, that is so exciting.
He's had a top 25 player in the world type season without
a win. Totally. Do you guys ever get angry tweets from about people who are like, why are you talking so much about Tiger? Like, it's amazing. Yeah. It's amazing how short-sighted those are. Like, oh my god, like, of course I'm gonna talk about Tiger. Like, he could barely walk a year ago and he was leading a major this year. Like, that's nuts. We don't only talk about Tiger. God, we just spent an hour talking about agronomy and stuff. Like, I spent a long time like following him around the beginning of the year, and that's why I was in Riviera and like thinking and wrote a 5,000 word essay, and it was like, you know, got like a million views on our website. Like, there a lot of people care about Tiger. Tiger's important.
It's he's important. I don't think he's gonna do well this week.
I don't think so. I think he's gassed. He's pretty tired. He needs to take a couple weeks off. Get ready for that FedEx Cup playoff chase.
Does he really need to get ready for that though?
No, he needs to make the Ryder Cup team though. Is he on the Ryder Cup team?
I'd rather have him just take the whole FedEx Cup playoffs off.
Wow, what an indictment for FedEx Cup playoffs.
I mean, like, it adds nothing to his career. This is the whole thing. Like, only thing that matters for Tiger at this point forward is majors.
Yes.
That's the only thing that matters.
Yeah.
To a certain extent, like, that's where a lot of players get at the end of their career, where, like, Phil, like, another PGA Tour win, it doesn't matter. Majors are the only thing that really matter.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, all right.
I think Lavner had a good article today about how his swing speeds have gone down.
Interesting.
Every event, six miles per hour since the Honda, and just every event really since Wells Fargo. And then a bunch of truthers started jumping in about how he switched to shaft and stuff like that. Crazy. But yeah, no, there's no reason for him to play the FedEx Cup. None.
No.
None. Especially when it could mean like going into the Ryder Cup, he played whatever, six times and seven of it. Like, it's just, there's no reason.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's a lock for the Ryder Cup as is, assuming he's healthy. So I don't think that's changing anything. So. All right, guys, we will talk to you soon. Enjoy the PGA. And, yeah, thanks for coming on.
All right.
Andy, pleasure.
Always. Number two in the books for me. Woo! Suck it, Martin.
You've been listening to the Fried Egg Podcast. We do the digging for you.